All right, Luke chapter 7. Y'all better have some discussion and some questions in you tonight, because I don't know if I got 30 minutes of preaching me tonight or not. Do the best we can. Last week we talked about an effective principle found, modeled in the book of Judges, about how Gideon took a situation, exercised methods, if you will, that have been repeated many, many times in conflicts and in normal situations throughout the years, and American military still practices and preaches it today. We called it troop leading procedures, and the basic idea was something we already knew well, that is, the Bible that was written yesterday still has total relevance and usefulness today in today's situations. Now, today's going to be a little bit different. Downstairs in our Sunday school class, we've been talking about Christian character. And we talk a lot, we listen a lot, we hear a lot. But character comes down to not just what we know, but what we do and what we are when some people call it a teabag theory of character. You guys ever heard of the teabag theory? What happens to a tea bag when you drop it in a cup full of boiling water? What's on the inside comes outside in the presence of all that heat. And so the tea bag theory of character says what you are on the inside is going to be revealed during tough times when the heat's on. So tonight we're going to look at an example that many believe to be a great example of what leadership period looks like, but certainly military leadership. The guy that we're going to talk about is a military guy, and read a book. I can't remember the name of the author. Colonel Jeff something spent a whole bunch of years in the military. He wrote a book. I've read it and underlined it. Didn't make slides, but basically we're going to cover some of the principles that he brought out that we see emulated and modeled by this guy called the Centurion. So we're going to look at the Centurion. And if I bring up some principles that you want to further discuss, or I don't bring up one that you've seen and heard of, we would invite you to do that. What are the principles that can be exercised by anybody in a leadership capacity? And by the way, while men mostly speak up here, truth matter is, women are every bit as much leaders as are men, and the principles don't matter whether it's a man or a lady. So Luke chapter 7, we'll read the story. And we'll launch out and we'll go through some of these things. Leadership principles as displayed by Mr. Centurion guy. He had, in the Luke chapter 6, it's kind of the great sermon that's similar to Matthew 5, 6, and 7. He had just been through that. And now he's done, and now he goes about doing some ministry things. Chapter 7. Now when he had ended all his sayings in the audience of the people, he entered into Capernaum. And a certain centurion's servant, who was dear unto him, was sick and ready to die. When he heard of Jesus, he sent unto him the elders of the Jews, beseeching him that he would come and heal his servant. And when they came to Jesus, they besought him instantly, saying that he was worthy for whom he should do this. Their reasoning, verse 5, one of my favorite verses, for he loveth our nation, and he hath built us a synagogue. Then Jesus went with them, and when he was now not far from the house, the centurion sent friends to him, saying unto him, Lord, trouble not thyself, for I am not worthy that thou shouldst enter under my roof. Wherefore neither thought I myself worthy to come unto thee, but saying a word, my servant shall be healed. For I also am a man set under authority, having under me soldiers, and I say unto one, go, and he goeth. To another, come, and he cometh. To my servant, do this, and he doeth it. When Jesus heard these things, he marveled at him, and turned him about, and said unto the people that followed him, I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And they that were sent, returning to the house, found the servant whole that had been sick. So as their initial objective, God answered, never says Jesus went all the way to the house. So as we read through here, we see some basic principles before we go searching very far. First thing that we see is a Roman centurion there exercising rule over the Jews during a period of occupation when the Jews weren't free, had compassion for his servant. Uh-oh. So, principle one, leaders are not heartless. Turn it on. Leaders turn their cell phones off before they get to church. Leaders are not heartless. Leaders have compassion. He cared for those that worked for him. How many of you have ever had a boss, whether it be in the military or otherwise, that you were convinced didn't care about you? Now, for a long time, I had the privilege of working for Uncle back there. He had to ride me hard like a horse that needed a crop. But there was never a doubt in my mind that he cared about me. What will you take regarding discipline, regarding help, regarding whether or not you know that person doing it cares for you or not? What you think is best in leadership? What do you do if you know that's best, but you wind up with somebody that doesn't care? Again, the answer to that question is a test of your view and your practice of leadership. Do you still need to follow even if you know they don't care about you like the centurion did? Yep. What do you use? What do you use to follow when your boss don't care?
Your own character.
I like that. What else? I like the verse that says, do all things as unto the Lord, and mentally and in your heart, do what's necessary. The man's got the authority to tell you to do. Just like this man said, I can tell one go, and he goes. I tell another one to come, and he comes. But if a guy doesn't care about me, or a gal doesn't care about me that's my boss, I'll just think, well, I'm doing what I'm paid to do, or what I'm, well, even if it's a volunteer thing, what I'm supposed to do. But I'm not really doing it for you, I'm doing it for the Lord. Do all things as unto the Lord. Bible says treat them, pray for them that despitefully use you. So that's good leadership. But if you want to be a good leader, step one, care. Have compassion. Have folks that you're close to be dear unto you. When they're dear unto you and they have a need, go take care of the need. How many of you have ever seen a need and passed by? The last time I remember doing that, I still remember doing that. Norm and I were in, Norma's left me. Norm and I were in Normandy, France, and we drove down to Paris right at the end of it. I had to take a rental car back to the airport, and as I passed through the airport, some teenage girl sitting there crying. Don was expected back. I was about half lost. The trains were about to stop running. I passed her by. I still remember passing her by. Shouldn't ought have done it, should I? When you see somebody need, take care of it. The centurion did. And he went to the source that could take care of him. He begged him. But he also followed proper protocol. How many times do you have folks that go through channels that are not correct? This Roman was not in his own country. And what did he do? He called Jews that knew who he was and asked them to go to Jesus to take care of it. So he did things in an appropriate manner. And I love what they say about him, and I love this from a standpoint of where our nation is at today. This man was in a nation that was not his nation. I think about our missionaries as I read about him. How many of our missionaries are pouring out their lives? Josh Poss and his wife down in Ecuador. Brother Ray and Jerry Redmond, we're going to read about here in just a little while, 4 decades in Korea. They love the Lord. They love that nation that God's called them to serve. And they're doing today what the centurion did yesterday. And he demonstrated his love for Israel by, while Israel was in captivity, building them a synagogue. Now, one of my values, personal values, is patriotism. I love going to church here because we got a bunch of patriotic fools here, and I love that. But I wonder, do we have that same level of love that the centurion did, and are we doing what we can to build this church, to get this church paid for, to look and see where another church is needed and to build that church and help them get started? Do we love our nation? We can show that we do, not just say that we do, as we copy, if you will, the the centurion and building not a synagogue now, but a church. And before he ever got there, he showed a level of humility. These are all things we get directly from the scripture. He said, "Don't even have to come to my house." He said, "I'm not worthy." We see that all the time. Gideon, we talked about last week when he was called, said, "Who, me?" Didn't consider himself worthy. This man says, just stop there. You can say it and it'll happen. And then, like the lady with the two mites, Jesus made an example out of this centurion man, saying, turned him around and said, "Look at this." He said, "This is what right looks like. I haven't seen this much faith amongst you Jews." A lot of times we cast ourselves on a pretty high level being independent Baptists and think that everybody else must just be ashamed of being independent Baptist, right? But Jesus turned around a Roman soldier and said, "This is what faith looked like." What was the end of the story? The man got healed. Mission accomplished. So the centurion had these principles. Let's talk about the centurion just a little bit. Paul talked about, as he got to the end of his life, he said the words, I fought a good fight. So one of the things that we can see in the principles as a centurion is he didn't start as a centurion. Anybody have any idea how a centurion got to be a centurion? I know, centurion. It's not centurion. Was it you who was telling me that? Thanks, Kenny. I'm making you wince every time I say it, aren't I? Captain of 100, authority over 100 people. Did he start there? Do you know where a centurion starts? In the trenches. As a grunt. Do you know it takes 17 to 20 years of faithful, regular service, moving your way up before you can do that? You went through a lot of training. Jonathan, you have. Anybody that's in the military has to go through a lot of training. And he had to do all of these things before he was granted the privilege. But when he said something, he had the authority, and the authority was credible because he never asked anybody to do anything that he hadn't already demonstrated and done himself. All right? Is that the way our legislature does it today? Do they lead our country in the legislation of laws with centurion principles as they legislate? What's almost always language in a bill that they pass today? Anybody know? They exempt themselves from having to follow it. Is that a centurion principle? Is that something we should continue to put up with? Anybody exempted from laws is vain and pompous and against the principles of the Bible. In this book that I read, the centurion, Jeff O'Leary is a man's name that wrote the thing. Highly recommend it. But what he did is he went all the way back to antiquity and he took leaders and said, these are the principles that these men had that caused them to be great leaders, that caused them to be written about in history books. And he showed some things, not necessarily written in the Bible, but written by Josephus and others, that showed us the training and the preparation of what a centurion went through to get where they did. One of the qualities of a centurion was loyalty. I think I've heard of that somewhere. Didn't you preach on that your first time around here? One of the principles of leadership in the army is loyalty. And here's a story from one of those great leaders a long time ago. It was in the Roman Empire. I'm struggling to remember his name, but basically, he went through and he had success in every battle, and they ganged up. They got him outnumbered 5-1, and they surrounded, and they had him and his good group of men basically at a point of capture. And before they annihilated them all, they made a deal. They said, we will spare all of your lives if you'll give us your leader. I can't remember the leader's name. But here's what happened. As they came out to exercise judgment on that one, chop his head off, let the rest go home, a man in that group of whatever it was, 1,000 people, stepped forward and said, "I am he." And they went towards him with a sword, and another man stepped forward and said, "No, I am he." And by about the time 2 or 3 minutes had passed, each of those 1,000 men had stepped forward and claimed to be the guy. What's that called? Loyalty. Did the man that was the leader ask those men to do that? Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, and that a man lay down his life for his friends. In this particular case, this man was a friend because those that he led stepped forward and said, I'll be you. I'll be the one that they execute judgment over. Jeff O'Leary did several people like that. Then he got into American leaders. Who do you think some of the American leaders that he discussed were? And what were some of the principles that you see in their lives that emulates the leadership principles of a centurion? This is kind of like Sunday school. Who are some of the leaders do you think that Jeff O'Leary talked about? Yes, sir, Brother Jason. George Washington. You know what? Tell me some of the things that you see that show centurion-like principles in Mr. George Washington, our first president's life. Yes, what principle? Yes, sir. That's a principle in many of theirs. He led from the front.
He had to follow me, not go, and I'll come in behind you.
What else? Another one of the principles you talked a few weeks back was selfless service. Do you know what George Washington was in his heart? If you would have to ask him, what are you? Well, you know what he had said? I'm a farmer. George Washington loved farming. He had a beloved farm called Mount Vernon, and his heart's desire was to experiment with different things with animals and crops and farm. He kept careful records. He kept careful books. He wanted to farm. You know how many times he left the farm selflessly at the demands of his fellow countrymen? First to serve the Continental Army, the Continental Congress before Army was called. Second to lead the nation in war in the Revolutionary War. Thirdly, for 8 years to serve as our first president when he was inaugurated April 29th, 1789. Selflessly putting aside for the time being for the good of others what he wanted to do what needed to be done. He said some pretty strong statements like, I'd rather die than be president. But he did it. Why? Because he had the centurion purpose of being selfless. Any others on George Washington that y'all can think of that shows that he led like a Roman centurion did of old? The word humble. Could George Washington have been king for life? There are people that are afraid that Mr. Obama might try to do that exact thing between now and the election. Could Mr. George Washington have been king for life had he wanted to after his second term went from 1790 basically to 1798? Could he have had a third, a fourth, a fifth term? He could have. He set the model that set us aside and made us distinctive as a free nation by gladly stepping aside and going back and doing, after he'd done his duty, to his beloved Mount Vernon. And set the standard for what leadership amongst presidents in this country is supposed to look like. Okay, who else do you think they talked about besides Mr. O'Leary talked about besides George Washington? And what principle did he show? I'm not preaching to you guys now. I'm discussing a little bit. You got to help me here, though. I'm an old guy. Come on, I had heart surgery 2 weeks ago, for heaven's sakes. Help me out. Help me. Who else? He did not bring Eisenhower in, but let's go ahead and discuss Mr. Dwight David Eisenhower. How does Eisenhower have centurion principles?
He cared about his soldiers. He was actually a bit skeptic about doing D-Day because it was so foggy. It was hard for his men to see the enemy, but the enemy could see them. So he hesitated a little bit for D-Day, but he still went on.
America entered into the war in December of 1941. D-Day was June of 1944. That is just 2.5 years. 2.5 years. All of 42, all of 43, and halfway through 44. 2.5 years later, he was a general of the armies. Does anybody know what rank he was at the start of World War II? Anybody know?
Colonel.
one level above me, Colonel 06. He never vaunted forth himself. We talked about the humility of George Washington. Dwight David Eisenhower rose through the ranks to become a four-star general, become over many, many men that had, if you will, the word seniority over him because of his servant leadership principles, becoming a four-star and named as the supreme Allied commander over all of Europe. And he had that principle in common. Yes, sir. Dwight David never did. Omar Bradley did. Omar Bradley, if I'm not mistaken, I think he just got four. Y'all can help me with that, but I think he just got four. I don't know. I'll have to look that. Yeah. But the bottom line is he did it with humility. We're going to talk about another guy here in a minute that came earlier that was exactly the opposite of that. He also had a quick and meteoric rise, but he did it through the puffing up of his own self and the things that he said before the press and so on. So although he didn't talk about Eisenhower, Mr. Eisenhower was president when I was born. I believe him to be one of the military greats. All right. Who else did he talk about? Had those kind of principles. Come on, class. It's one that always comes up in our class. Who is it? Yes, ma'am. Abraham Lincoln. Thank you. Was Abraham Lincoln in the military? He was the commander-in-chief. Was Abraham Lincoln engaged with the Civil War? Did he pay attention to what was going on, and did he command his generals? The answer is yes. He knew what was going on. Does anybody know who Mr. Lincoln promoted and put in charge of the armies of the North? Anybody know his name? Not initially. I'm talking about before Grant. Grant would come again about halfway through, just like Eisenhower came about halfway through. Grant would be the guy about halfway through. But anybody remember the name of the guy? His name was George B. McClellan. George B. McClellan. Now, McClellan was a guy that was a mama's boy, and he came in second in the class of West Point, in the very same class of Thomas Jonathan Stonewall Jackson, who was a great man, who was about number 60 in academics in the same class as George McClellan. McClellan spent the rest of his life whining that he wasn't number one and that there was a plot against him because he didn't get to give the whatever valedictorian speech or something. And so when the Civil War started, Abraham Lincoln was elected about 16 or so weeks before he became president. He was elected in 60. He took office in January of 1861. And so he was actually recruiting generals because he knew the war was coming. So he was lining up who his leadership team would be. And Mr. George B. McClellan had about three different opportunities, and he wound up taking the best deal for him. That goes against the selfless service that you taught about. So he was commander of troops from the state of Ohio. You guys ever heard this term, the squeaky wheel? It's the grease. And so George B. McClellan, even though Ohio and what their needs were was very low on the pecking order, he began to say he could win this war single-handedly only if he had the resources. So he began to whine and complain, and before long, Ohio had about two or three times more men than they needed for where they were in the war, and he was the commander of troops from Ohio. The man by the name of Winfield Scott was the leader, and basically, listen to this, he put things out. He kept putting things out. They were printed. And finally, Mr. Lincoln accepted the resignation of Winfield Scott and promoted a 34-year-old George B. McClellan to the commanders of the Army of the Potomac, I believe is what the North was called. How'd he do? He lost the first three, four, five battles. Now, the reason I'm talking so much about McClellan, listen to this carefully. In leadership principles, when things aren't going well, you can actually learn more than you can when things are going well, if you respond correctly. And there was about three times as much verbiage on McClellan, and the reason that he said he did it is he wanted to put principles out that go against what Centurion principles, and effectively, Mr. McClellan was a leader that did not lead using principles. Battle after battle after battle, they would lose, and McClellan would always say, I've been given inept generals. He would claim to be outnumbered 2 or 3 to 1, when in fact, if you go back and look at the battlefield, he had a 2 or 3 to 1 superiority, but he just wasn't the same kind of a leader as Robert E. Lee, who he was facing on the side of the South. Lee often was outnumbered 3 or 4 to 1, but he knew how to move his guys around and take care of the situation. So after about 2 years of command, Mr. Lincoln sent a dispatch to Mr. McClellan, who often would wait and hesitate. There's another principle. When you have a situation going on that's fluid like a battle, if you wait a day to get a perfect situation, guess what? The enemy doesn't stand still. Think about this in terms of the fight that we fight spiritually. Many, many times, a workable solution that will work today needs to be initiated and done instead of trying to wait for perfection tomorrow, because what you thought would be perfection tomorrow suddenly isn't even a viable plan because the enemy has moved and you don't have the same situation tomorrow. Mr. McClellan often hesitated because he was afraid to take any risk because he had a horrible aversion to blame. And when blame come, which it often did because he lost most of his battles during that 2-year period, who took the blame? His men, his general, or the president himself? I read things that he wrote about the president that should have had him fired in about his second month of command. What do we do if we're going to lead by military principles? How much time? One guy that I know said it like this. If you're wanting to lead, some people believe that in order to climb up, you have to push down on people below you, pull down on people above you in order to climb yourself. But this particular man said no. He said, if you want to lead and lead correctly and you're climbing a ladder, he said, the folks that are below you, give them a hand. The folks that are above you, push them up. What you'll find is as you're climbing, be folks below you helping. Be folks above you helping. One's pushing, one's pulling. But in the meantime, you'll get help coming on up the ladder yourself. Mr. McClellan did exactly the opposite of that. He often hesitated. I remember the dispatch. I shouldn't say I remember it, but I read it. Lincoln said to McClellan, Mr. McClellan, if you're not going to use your army, would you mind loaning it to me for a few days so I can? Yeah. And then he was fired and he was not anymore. Who else in American history can you think of that an author would use to show that today even, or in the course of our history since our inception, led with centurion principles? Who else? Kenny? Reagan. Tell me why. Because his daddy's a big Reagan fan, so I'm anxious to hear what this is. He did not use Mr. Reagan, but go ahead.
Well, this is just a funny little snippet about him. Before he was inaugurated, however that word is said.
It's not inebriated. Oh, inaugurated, okay.
Before he was put into presidency, whoever we were at war with at the time let go of all of our POWs because they were scared of Reagan himself. It's just a funny little snippet that I know. He was not himself in the war, but he was there in spirit. You could feel his presence when he was not there because of the way he led our country and the way he used the principles of putting others first. Selflessness, of course. He would always, it's kind of hard to explain, he would do what had to be done the right way.
Is that a good principle? Do what needs to be done the right way? That's a good principle that goes beyond just the centurion, but you're exactly right. Let's go back just for a minute. For how many folks are thankful for America? All right. Let's look and play what if just for a minute with history. Are you ready? What was Lincoln's focus as our commander-in-chief during the Civil War? What was his main objective as president of the United States of a divided nation? What was his main purpose? Getting rid of slavery was one of them, but what was the end objective even after that? One nation. Mr. Lincoln prayed every day for a nation that was now divided to come back together. So think about that, and think about the way he said things. Think about the way he executed the war, the decisions that he made. And, of course, he was assassinated before he got to see it all come together there in late April, early May of 1865 as the final things were happening. But think of another man that led the side of the South, and think about his character, one we haven't talked about right now, which is who led the armies of the South. Anybody know? Robert E. Lee. Anybody know anything about Robert E. Lee? Tell us about Robert E. Lee. I'm sure with you being on that submarine, you know a lot about his character. Had his finger on the pulse and was able to make a split decision that seemed to always be right. With working against deficits of 3 or 4 to 1, he always came out on top until when? After the death of Stonewall Jackson at a place called Chancellorsville, another man we haven't talked about yet, but a man that certainly led with Centurion principles. Stonewall Jackson is one of my personal heroes. He established a Sunday school for black children in the state of Virginia, so that they might first learn to read, then that they might become saved. He absolutely loved and adored children. They loved and adored him. Had a little daughter, and children were always a part of his life. And 39 years old, was a servant leader. He died at Chancellorsville under friendly fire. After that, there was a great victory. Chancellorsville, except for the loss of Stonewall Jackson, was a great victory for America because of Robert E. Lee. And the way he moved his troops, he overcame a 4-to-1 deficit. And there was like, I don't know how many, both at several battles you can mention. The deadliest day in American history was at the battle of, help me out, not Gettysburg. Gettysburg had 38,000 casualties on the north over 3 days. Antietam. Antietam was the deadliest day. There, I don't remember the exact number, but it was both sides, somewhere in the 35, 40,000 killed in the same day from both sides. But after those two victories, Robert E. Lee decided to take the fight to the north, and he went up into Pennsylvania, and at a place, if you've ever been there, if you haven't been there, you should go. It's at a place called Gettysburg. What happened? He got whooped. He turned around, and he come home, and had Meade, the guy that was put in charge for the north, have done something about it, they could have actually ended the war right there at the end of Gettysburg. But again, indecisive generals from the north, the war extended. That was July of 1863. It would be almost 2 years later, and another, I don't know, the total death on both sides in the Civil War was somewhere in the range of 620,000. But my point I was going back to a while ago is, would we have a United States of America were it not for the principles of leadership exercised by Abraham Lincoln that had a sole focus to keep America together, and a Robert E. Lee, the losing general, that commanded his guys to go home, let bygones be bygones, and the country slowly be put back together. Could it have happened had it not been for those two men and their selfless leadership principles? I personally don't think so. I think we would have had a completely split nation, and what we studied and what we enjoy would have been in half.